This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. For about 3 years, Robbie Foulkes wrote a song a week for a Nashville publishing company, but no performers recorded his songs. Too bad for them. He writes some great songs, and last year we invited him on Fresh Air to play a few. We're about to hear an encore of that broadcast. Robbie Foulkes writes and performs alternative rock songs as well as alternative country. He lives in Chicago, where he taught for many years at the famed Old Town School of Folk Music. Foulkes is starting to become better known. He has a new compilation disc called The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes on Bloodshot Records, due out next month.
The town is hard to stir in. The nightclubs all were closed. Only a washed-up cover band hitting the stage at Joe's. The guitar hit the first bar of Secret Agent Man. A door in the back blew open, and into the room they ran. Roots, rock, weirdos, up from the underground. Starboard till you're a V3, any old-fashioned sound. Roots, rock, weirdos, out of their holes they come. Dressed up like it's 1951. Yeah! Well, they look...
That's Roots Rocks Weirdos, one of the cuts from The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes. Terry spoke with Foulkes last year when he made his major label debut on Geffen with the CD Let's Kill Saturday Night.
You kind of have a foot in the rock singer-songwriter world and a foot in the country music world. What do you see as the difference between those two musical places?
Well, first of all, I see that they have some things in common. They have my favorite kinds of rock and country music have a live performance quality in common, where you get genetically great musicians in a room looking at each other and playing off of each other. And if there are occasional, so-called mistakes, then that's less important than the overall vibe and the quality of communication with each other in the band and with the listener. And also, as far as the songwriting goes, a kind of unflinching honesty and an authentic personality and point of view in the songwriting are things that I like in both rock songwriting and country songwriting. As far as what's different besides all the cosmetic things, you know, that one is kind of louder and uglier than the other one a lot of the time, I think that rock songwriting permits more impressionism and more obscurity in some of the lyrics than country songwriting does. To me, the special terrain that country works so well that no other kind of music does is the taking the everyday problems of life and dealing with them in simple, universal, uncompromising language.
I'd love for you to do a song for us. Let me suggest a song that you also do on your new CD, and it's called I Can't Win for Losing You. Would you say something about the song before you sing it for us?
Yeah, it's not an earth-shaking song. It's, and the lyrics are real, like I said, simple and universal. It kind of reminds me of a Roger Miller kind of 60s groove. It's a shuffle, and it's one of those things. Another thing that country specializes in, I guess, is a sad song set to happy, up-tempo grooves.
There you go again, out of control again, off running like the wind, leaving me blue. Well, I take you back and then you break my heart again. It seems I just can't win. Tried a thousand times to keep his love alive, but your fickle heart just can't be true. Now I've pinned my every hope onto a lie. Well, I just can't win for losing.
take you back and then you break my heart again. It seems I just can't win for losing you. Well, a man's a fool that makes the same mistake time after time and feels each heartache like it was brand.
That's a really good song. I really like that a lot. That's Robbie Foulkes, and it's a song he also does on his new album. The album is called Let's Kill Saturday Night. Robbie, you lived in Nashville for a few years, and you were actually working for one of those song publishing companies, writing a lot of songs for the company, being like a staff songwriter. That must have been a really interesting experience. What made you decide to go down to Nashville and try out that life and that approach in the music business?
Well, you know, Nashville was there, and so I decided to take a stab at it. I had a friend that worked down there as a staff songwriter. I never did live down there, actually, but I've been up in Chicago for the last 15 years, and I've got a family up here and stuff, so I couldn't quite take the plunge and totally relocate. But I thought I'd get my foot in the door, and I was so encouraged by my first trip or two down there that you know, I got a writer deal in fairly fast order and got set up with a performance rights organization, and away we went. And that's where I just kind of hit the brick wall after that. But it did let me spend 3 years kind of honing my craft, you know, as a part-time job, it let me spend several hours every day just sitting in my room and writing songs. And that was just invaluable to me.
What's the deal like working with a publishing company?
Well, you sort of have you know, an editor to help you give you feedback, and you know, somebody at the publisher will say, well, this line at a good publisher, that is, will say this line doesn't exactly feed out of this line before it, and this hook isn't quite strong enough, or, you know, this song, go back and rewrite this from a female point of view and make it a little softer and take out that mention where you say that the singer is 5'2" because we want somebody taller to be able to sing it too. So I'd get all sorts of comments like that, and sometimes I'd pay attention to them and sometimes I wouldn't. And then they'll go out and record and try to pitch them to Garth Brooks or whoever, and make $1 million.
So I could see how the artiste in you would feel offended that somebody was editing your songs. On the other hand, it must have been really helpful craft-wise to have somebody critiquing every song like that.
Yeah, well, I kind of knew what I was getting into, I guess, when I took the job. And to me, it was, well, spend some time writing for this market, or, you know, as best I can. And that kind of work is sort of more like crossword puzzle work. Then I'll spend the rest of the time just writing whatever I feel like. And that's how I got, for instance, a lot of the songs off of the Let's Kill Saturday Night record was, you know, that other half of the time that was just for me.
And what about I Can't Win for Losing You, which you just played? Which was that?
That was more or less a Nashville pitch, actually, because I co-wrote it with a songwriter down there, and they demoed it in pretty quick order. They liked that one a lot, but in general, people down there aren't looking for something that old-fashioned sounding to sing, and, you know, the shuffle quality and the little yodel quality and all the rest of that is so old hat and outmoded to them that didn't really trip any triggers down there.
So what's in if that's out?
What's in is kind of soft rock, you know, my friend John Langford says that country music today is just kind of like suburban light rock music, and that's pretty much it to me. It's got to be, it helps if it's kind of feminized and socially aware and doesn't offend anybody.
Do you want to do a few bars of what you think of as the prototypical song that you've just described?
Well, no, I don't want to offend any other songwriters, but I got plenty that I wrote like that. Like, here's a chorus of something I wrote. Look how close we came when we hardly had a prayer and only seconds left to spare. Then the hand of fate came and pulled us from the flame. I can't imagine losing everything, but look how close we came. That kind of thing, you know. That's, to me, that was a Tim McGraw kind of a pitch, and I'm singing it, kind of making fun of it as I'm singing it, but... it's a song about a guy that almost lost his wife, and then they almost lost their kid, and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think whenever the hand of fate makes an appearance, it's always a bad sign.
Very bad sign.
So how did you feel when you wrote in a hand of fate line?
I thought it was great. A hand of fate pulled him from the flame. I thought, well, this is just cliched enough to send out to middle America and see what happens.
Now, who decides on the fate of a song? You write it, you send it to the publishing company, and then what happens?
And then it's just out in the free marketplace down in Nashville for various A&R people and producers and artists to listen to and decide if they want to do it.
Well, how do they shop for songs, or how are songs shopped to them?
I don't know. I've never done it. I don't really know, except it's just kind of an insular network down there where they'll have meetings. And, well, an artist, for instance, there's a thing called Rofax down there, which is a facsimile that is sent out every week and that has lists of so-and-so, Brooks and Dunn are looking for an up-tempo tune a la Marie or whatever their last hit was. And so-and-so is looking for a hot ballad. And most of them just say, so-and-so is looking for a gigantic hit.
So basically, you'd sit home and hope that the hand of fate would point one of your songs out to
pull me from the flame of penury. Uh-huh.
Robbie Foulkes speaking with Terry Gross last year. His new CD is The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes. It's due out in January. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with singer-songwriter Robbie Foulkes.
Did you give yourself different assignments so, you know, that you'd have different kinds of singers to work for? Like, well, today I'll try the ballad, next week I'll try the up-tempo for a middle-aged singer-songwriter, for a middle-aged woman singer or something?
Yeah, definitely. Set yourself little tasks like that. And, you know, at some point it just gets so un-you and so inauthentic that it just shows through the songwriting. So it's... For me, it was kind of a little difficult to walk that line where I'd use lyrics that were obviously cliched and obviously that I didn't believe while I was writing them, but still try to make it sincere sounding. So maybe it was just inevitably an impossible task from the beginning.
On the other hand, I think there must be something very liberating about writing for a character as opposed to writing confessional autobiographical lyrics and just thinking about, you know, the shapeliness of the song instead of thinking about whether you personally really mean it.
Yeah, or it's like a lot of great writers that got their start writing Pulp Fiction or obituaries or H.L. Mencken doing crime reporting or anything like that. It's just a place to get your tools together, and it is helpful to get outside of your personality and try to adopt other voices, I think.
I'm going to ask you to do another song, and this is from a previous album that was called South Mouth. And the song is called Forgotten But Not Gone. Tell us how you wrote this and if you had anybody or any type of song in mind while doing it.
Yeah, I had sort of a Johnny Paycheck style in mind. Johnny's got a lot of stuff that he did with Aubrey Mayhew on the Little Darlin' label in the late 60s that is just as good as anything ever done in country music. This is, of course, well before the Take This Job and Shove It period, which got a little bit more cartoonish. But like a lot of stuff you write, you start with an idea, it kind of gets away from that. So the end product doesn't really sound that much like him, but it still has some of the chord changes that I liked about some of that stuff. This old house turned cold.
when he walked in. Oh, and I felt myself fading as you smiled at him. Now lately I'm just barely hanging on. A shadow of the man you loved, forgotten but not gone. Forgotten like a fool, the time passed by. But the day that I let go, I know I'll die. Unwanted man, a ghost in my own home. That's how it feels to be forgotten but not gone. Every night, these two arms reach out for you. Oh, but you just can't feel their touch the way you used to. I guess no heart can hold to love too long. One staked his claim, now one remains, forgotten but not gone. Forgotten like a fool, the time passed by. I see my whole life passing in your eyes, and the epitaph carved in your heart of stone. Here lies a true love, forgotten but not gone.
That's Robbie Foulkes performing a song that he wrote called Forgotten But Not Gone. And he has a new CD called Let's Kill Saturday Night. So what was the fate of that song after you wrote it?
Nothing happened to that one. You mean as far as the Nashville network?
Yeah, that's one of the ones you submitted, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I'd write four or five a month and send them all down and just see what happened. Nothing happened to that one, so I went and recorded it. And, you know, as I started doing my own records, I started getting the suspicion that anything that didn't really excite them down there might be a worthy song, so that I should consider it one that I might record myself.
Did you feel like you had to have a certain number of hooks per song, or, you know, like, what advice did they give you on hooks?
I think my publisher and I both thought that I was pretty hook oriented to begin with. So I don't think I ever got the response, go back this and make it more memorable sounding, or, you know, center it all on the hook. I had that part of the craft pretty well down. I think most of the advice that I got, was was what I was saying. Just take some of the hard edges off. Nobody's ever going to sing a line like, I feel like a dog, or anything that's that, anything that's that un-up with people or bluesy. Nobody's going to get that near. There's a wash of positive Oprah Winfrey-style feeling down in Nashville nowadays, apparently.
Robbie Foulkes spoke with Terry Gross last year. His new album, The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes, comes out in January. He starts a tour in the Midwest with the Cabaret Metro in Chicago on January 29th. We'll hear more from Foulkes in the second half of our show. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Back with singer and songwriter Robbie Foulkes. He has a new CD coming out in January on Bloodshot Records called The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes. He writes rock and country songs. For 3 years, he wrote nearly a song a week for a Nashville music publishing company. No one recorded his songs, but now he's recording them himself. He says that his editors at the publishing company occasionally asked him to change hard-edged lyrics.
Can you play a few bars of something that got the most negative reaction that you like?
Sure. Early on, I found out about the great, the great woman problem, which is that stuff that you write for that market has to fit into what they think a woman would want to sing or want to hear, and that automatically disqualified about 90% of my catalog. But they would say, go back and write something that's more friendly to women. So just to be sort of ornery, I went back home one time and wrote a song called, I got one here that I really think you'll like, and they said, what's the name? I said, Hating Women is the name of it. The chorus kind of went, Hating Women, it's kind of a rockabilly thing. Hating Women. Yeah, loathe them like the Dickens, but you won't get far hating women. All right. And then it had a verse about Ernest Hemingway and a verse about pornographers and a verse about shopping. And it was just calculated for them not to like it. But it was a pretty good song, too.
Inspired a little bit by Rockin' Robin, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah. There's another song that I imagine didn't endear you to the Nashville community, though I don't know if they ever got to hear it. I'm thinking of a song that's on your new CD called God Isn't Real. Did you send that one down to Nashville?
Yeah, that's one of the ones that you sent in, or I sent it in, partly because it's so fun to watch the... we had a Christian receptionist down there at the place where I worked, and one of her jobs was to write up all the titles in her... in the database, and there were some titles of mine that she just wouldn't write, and it was always fun to try and make up some of these titles that wouldn't just stop her fingers on the keyboard.
Is that why you wrote this song?
That's not why I wrote the song, but that was definitely the most fun thing about submitting that. And also another song of mine, F This Town, which was another one that stopped her fingers from typing.
It's like a Nashville anti-anthem. Play us a chorus of God Isn't Real, but before you do, tell us what inspired the song.
Well, this song is an atheist song, and it basically represents my point of view, or a slightly radicalized or caricatured version of my point of view about the problem of evil and the implausibility of divine intelligence in the world. And the first chorus, for instance, goes, go ask the starving millions under Stalin's cruel reign. Go ask the child with cancer who eases her pain. Then go to your churches if that's how you feel. But don't ask me to follow, for God isn't real. That's the first chorus of that.
So what reactions did you get to it?
That is another one that kind of went into a black hole as far as they were concerned, but sort of an interesting reaction playing that. That's on my new record, and so I play it, you know, all the time now when I go out. And there's often a contingent of people that either refuse to clap, very ostentatiously refuse to clap for that one, or stare angrily, or on occasion just leave the concert at that point. That's happened in a couple cities so far, Atlanta, Oklahoma City, and a couple other places. So we always kind of look forward to pulling it out and just seeing what'll happen.
Does it ever bother you that by singing that God isn't real, you're not only expressing your opinions as an atheist, but you're saying that the God other people believe in isn't real and that you really might be offending them or challenging them in some way?
No, I don't think so, because I think the free exchange of ideas is a fine and American tradition that that I'd like to uphold. And I was on the same topic. I was doing an interview with a right-wing paper. The interviewer was Christian, and this is just the other week. And he said, well, I appreciate your putting it out on the table like that, because so much of the atheism that you hear in modern pop culture is just sort of a hidden and watered-down presupposition in music or in movies or in TV shows, and it's seldom stated so bluntly. And so better not to beat around the bush and just lay your cards out, I think.
So what reaction did you get at your publishing company when you sent the song down? You didn't really expect somebody was going to do it, right?
No, I really expected Alan Jackson might take a stab at God isn't real. I'm just that naive. No, I didn't hear anything, and I didn't expect to.
Did you see the Garth Brooks TV special?
No, I don't really watch TV. I heard about it, or I read about it somewhere.
Well, there's a part in his concert, this was like a video clip, where he goes flying a la Peter Pan across the stadium that he's performing in. He's, I suppose, suspended by wires the way everybody who plays Peter Pan on Broadway is. And I thought, wow, is that what you need to do now to sing country music, is fly across the stadium while singing with one of those little portable microphones?
That's great. I wish we could have just seen Webb Pierce flying around over
know,
his
exactly.
audience.
Who can imagine that?
I'd pay to see that.
You have a song called Blank This Town, Epithet This Town, which is a song about Nashville. You want to do just a couple of bars of that? And you could say Blank This Town instead of the word that you really use? Or,
sure.
Or another substitute if you prefer?
Hey, this ain't country western, it's just soft rock feminist crap. And I thought they'd struck bottom back in the days of Ronnie Millsap. Now they can't stop the flood of beep, there ain't a big enough ass cap. Sure, I like old Tim Carroll and BR549, but Nashville don't need that noise. No, Nashville will do just fine. As long as there's a moron market and a beep. I don't know how much I can say of this. So beep.
what
I mean, an idea.
Yeah. No, I'm wondering. Did the people who you were working with hear that song, and did they take it personally? Like, well, when are you this guy a break if that's the way he feels about the city and the music coming out of it?
Probably that didn't help my cause too much.
Yeah, probably. Were you in a moment of particular frustration when you wrote that?
I was having a really good time when I wrote that, but I mean, I have to say, as far as all of this relates to like sending stuff in and what their reactions were to it, I just kind of, after the first year of my 3-year deal, I stopped even thinking about it anymore and just started writing for my own pleasure, because so little was happening that I kind of gave up on it. So that song was written shortly after I gave up on it, and it was great to vent spleen and just to have total fun writing a song and to say whatever you wanted to say.
Robbie Foulkes from a 1998 interview. His new CD is the very best of Robbie Foulkes. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with our encore broadcast with singer-songwriter Robbie Foulkes.
Now that you're just writing for yourself and you're not sending songs to the Nashville Publishing Company, how has it affected your songwriting?
It makes it harder because, as I say, when you're writing for a particular market and writing in a style that a lot of other people are writing in, the rules are kind of there, laid down, and it's a little more crossword puzzle-like. But in writing and writing a, there's a song called Take Me to the Paradise on my new record that I absolutely wasn't working from some other form, at least consciously in my head as I was writing it. There wasn't so much of a model or a prototype for that kind of a song that I could think of. And so it's a lot harder to get it right, because you write a line and it doesn't automatically trigger, oh yeah, this says that, and now the next thing I need to say is that, if you know what I mean.
Right, right. Can you play a little bit of the song that you were just describing, Take Me to the Paradise?
Sure.
Stained glass windows, smoked wood tables. Slaves of culture toil by night. The pall of perfume, true confessions. And when the air gets thick as this, you can cut it with a straw. And as the moon hangs over Waverly, they call. Take me to the paradise. Let me live once more. Greater men have faced these walls and fallen on the floor.
So a song like that is clearly a little bit more literary in its aims than a lot of the songs I was just playing for you a second ago.
A little more oblique. And,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And harder to write.
Now, when you're writing a rock song, do you think it needs hooks in the way that your country songs do?
Yeah, I like everything to be memorable. I like a song that you hear it one time and you think, well, I've heard this a million times before, but you haven't. That's the kind of that's what I liked about the music that hit me when I was growing up, Beatles music and all that kind of pop music, and hooks.
When we have singer-songwriters on the show, I like to ask them at the end to redeem a song. So I'm going to ask you if you can think of a song that a lot of us might find uninteresting or square, and that you think is a really swell song that you'd like to play for us and redeem. When you think of a song, would you introduce it for us?
Yeah, let me think a second. This is called Dancing Queen by ABBA.
Friday night and the lights are low. Looking out for a place to go, where they play the right music. Getting in the swing, you're going to meet the king. Anybody could be that guy. Lights are low and the music's high. Where they play the right music, open in the swing, you're in the mood for a dance. And when you get the chance, you are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only
am very impressed. I mean, you not only did it, you did the whole song. You had it all worked out. Do you do this in your shows?
No, haven't done that one. We did it, maybe 3 years ago for two or three times, and then it kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Now, what do you love about the song? Why did you choose that to redeem?
I like that one because it's so much about melody and chords, and, you know, the words are so obviously just kind of wretched words written by people that don't speak English that well. But to me, it underscores the idea that that the words are less important than everything else a lot of the time, just general vibe, groove, melody, chorus. And I don't know, any time that there's like a sexy 17-year-old character in it, it's ipso facto interesting, I think.
Robbie Foulkes. He tours the Midwest next month, starting in Chicago on January 29th. His new compilation disc is the very best of Robbie Foulkes on Bloodshot Records. It's coming out in January. Here's May the Best Man Win. Robbie Foulkes from his new CD, The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes. This is Fresh Air.